Welcome to I'm Absolutely Fine, the podcast from the Midult that looks at all the glamour and indignity of being a grown-up.
If you listen on the Entail app, that's E-N-T-A-L-E, photos, links and videos of what we're talking about will pop up as you listen. Have a look.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
Are you absolutely fine? How are you?
Well, I'm absolutely fine, but it's my fucking birthday tomorrow. And I feel like hell. I do. I have to tell you, I feel like hell. My dad died on my birthday. You can't argue with that. I mean, 19 million years ago, 19
years ago. Oh, okay. So it's... Okay. Because when someone mentions death, you kind of go, okay, but we'll be guided by you about how... Not funny, or well, anyway, go.
That's the least of it.
Okay.
Oh god. Another year.
Yes.
I've thought of three I'm absolutely fine butts today, and I've forgotten them all because mine just a sort of crumbling skeleton housing a sort of amoeba in my head that isn't really a brain and doesn't fire on any electrical synapses at all. But what is it about birthdays? It's not just getting older.
Yeah.
It's just so triggering. So, apart from the fact that I'm delighted to be here with you beauties, you know, not so hot. To be honest, how are you, Em?
Well, I'm absolutely fine, but today I have a confession to make, which is that I had to do a hard thing, which is to be a grown-up and call a potential school for my daughter to find out a piece of information. And I'm so nervous that I asked Annabelle to do it and pretend to be me.
I don't know if you actually asked me or if I said, oh, for God's sake, I'll do it.
Just let me do it.
But then it occurred to us, didn't it?
Yeah, it occurred to us that maybe... that Annabelle might not know some crucial information.
What if they asked me for her date of birth or her postcode and I didn't have it off pattern? Emily literally said, I'll just write it down for you. So you've got it in front of you. And I went, you know what, Emily? You need to be a grown-up because otherwise we could be arrested.
And it was awful to realise that I just almost couldn't bring myself to do it. I was so nervous.
So she sent an email.
So I sent an email.
How very 2020. Yes,
so
good.
2020. But it is pathetic. I mean, I'm deeply shamed, but there you go. I didn't want an adult today and that was it. But anyway, we are not live currently from Annabelle's kitchen table with the...
Scummy Mummies!
Scummy Mummies!
Yes!
Hello! Yes.
She said superb. You didn't say superb. I said, now I'm
Should
on
try
edge.
Try it again.
Now
I'm on edge. Yeah. With the...
Superb Scummy Mummies!
There we are. That's
Hello to you both.
They
Hello
need,
to the listeners.
They need a lot of adulation, these two. They got a bit too famous.
Oh, we're comedians. What did you expect? You know,
such tarts for laughs.
They are a right pair of comedians who have given sloppy parents a good name. They are properly funny stand-ups, properly famous podcasters, and properly brilliant human beings. Helen Thorne and Ellie Gibson, how the fuck are you?
Well, what a start to things. Well, I am absolutely fine, but I have a terribly awful eye. My left eye looks horrible. I'm currently posing as Quasimodo's twin sister, and it's making me feel yucky. It's making me feel gross. I've got a puffy eye, and look, I'd rather have a sore leg. I'd rather all sorts of things. But when something is on your face, it makes you feel shit.
It does, lads. It makes you feel really shit.
And it's, you know, and it's affecting my sex life, which may have been the reason for it in the first
place. It's affecting my sex life. It pops into my head at night.
Like, oh, no, I can't. She cannot climb
at the moment, no. Oh, Helen's eye.
Well, Helen, do you suspect that there's a particularly sort of exotic type of sex injury?
Yeah, I think so. It all harks back to a one night stand and then an incident in a hot tub, which is a recipe for disaster. It was a recipe for infection. That's all.
Quite sure. What splattered in your eye?
It's just not the eye that we thought would get it.
Oh,
anyway.
God, I know. But at least it's not my fanny. And the fanny's still in working order. Yeah. That's clean. That's absolutely fine.
Every cloud.
We need to get you a Gabrielle style dreams will come true.
Yes.
Pirate patch.
Yeah. Oh, yes, exactly. I have been wearing my hair over my face and I've been wearing some very large...
It's just sort of a flock of seagulls thing that's been going on quite a lot.
What I'm suggesting is we are... slightly drinking. We could later. We could fashion one for you out of
something
crafty.
We could soak the label off the champagne bottle and stick that on my face. That would be nice.
We could use a mask,
a face covering.
Yeah, exactly. And she could just put it that way.
I tell you what, have you got any sanitary pads? Because then you don't even need a string. You just stick it on like a post-it. Be nice.
And in my house, you can't move for sanitary pads.
Well, this is the house I want to be in. Excellent. I think I've had my go. Ellie Gibson, you talk about you.
How are you, Ellie?
I'm absolutely fine, but yes, just struggling with, you know, the world coming to an end and all that, I suppose, Gemini. And yeah, things like, yeah, your story reminded me the other day when I rang the school because I couldn't pick up my little son Joe, and I had to get my friend Nikki, who you know, to do it. And she's called Nikki, her stage name is Nikki Beatnik, she's DJ Nikki on all the things. She's a good buddy of ours. And so I rang the school and I said, I can't pick Joe up, but Harley's mum, Nikki's going to pick him up. And the school were like, yes, what's Nikki's surname? And I was like, Beatnik? And they were like, we don't have a Nikki Beatnik on the... And I was like, well, that's... She's a DJ, which didn't, as if that would make it better.
Yeah, oh,
you're just going to a DJ whose name you don't know. Oh, that's perfectly fine.
That's, like, that's the safe word.
Nikki, yes. I don't have a DJ Nikki in the book. And I was like,
you know, the one with the Gucci bum bag, yes. and the oversized glasses and the over-the-knee
Harley's
boots.
Harley's mum.
You know, Harley's mum.
You know, and they were like, okay, we'll work it out. So, yeah, it's just stuff like that. I feel like every day is a daily sort of... battle against admin, which is even harder than it used to be, quite honestly.
Everything feels just harder and it's a bigger struggle.
Everything
and
does feel harder.
Very
and also
tired.
We're a bit less busy. It's just a lot harder to get anything done. Yeah. I just want to lie down all the time.
I keep writing lists and then the lists just don't get crossed off, and then I have to write another list, and that makes me tired. So that's hard.
I agree. List making is really defeating because you can't take anything off.
We were saying, weren't we, just a second ago, that so we've had COVID and lockdown and more lockdown and more nonsense, but it feels like all of us have had a thing, haven't we, on top of what we've been coping with. Everybody I know has had another little dollop of misery or horror.
I know, which makes 2020 such a good year. I mean,
yeah, because you know, those things are hard enough anyway without exactly the backdrop of kind of, you know, doom and gloom and are we all going to be all right and is everything going to be okay. I mean, I got completely derailed the other day by the fact that they closed one of the entrances to the train for COVID reasons, and so you had to walk like half a mile round to go the other entrance. And
I don't want that.
No, you don't want that. And everyone's missing their trains, and then everyone.
But also, in an atmosphere of not knowing what's going to happen next, the slightest little sort of inconvenience or diversion or unexpected bump in the road makes you go, "Holy fuck!" You know.
Oh yeah, it's too much. It's too much. I was in King's Cross the other day, and I couldn't go in one entrance, and it was completely free. There was no one there, but there was just a lady who said, "No, you've got to walk around." I was like, "But no!" And I was like, "Oh, I'm turned into a dreadful cunt all of a sudden." She's just doing her all of a sudden. I mean, it's been a gradual.
I don't mind being a dreadful cunt anymore.
Own it, Annabelle. Own it.
That's how I know I'm old. I'll fucking shout across a supermarket. I'll be stony-faced and unhelpful. Even when I know I'm making someone uncomfortable. Catch me on the wrong day at the wrong angle.
I've started tutting at people not wearing masks on the fucking train.
I think that's okay.
Oh, but you've always been a bit self-righteous.
I know, that's true. Exactly. Fuck it.
Emily used to offer her seat to pregnant women. Sorry, she used to offer other people's seats to pregnant women.
I would never get a seat. I'd be standing,
up.
See?
Yes.
Miming if necessary. But now I'm tutting at the...
It's the ones who wear it as like a chin hammock that I find deeply offensive. Like, you've gone to the effort of bringing a mask, hooking it round your ears, and then you've just a little chin hammock. And I was like, what benefit is that to anybody?
Well, the benefit's obvious. I mean, we could all do with one of those.
Yeah, obviously, since the slight weight gain of corona. But yeah, it makes me cross. It does make me cross on the tube, and I give them the eye. I haven't tutted yet. Just my good eye, my bad eye.
Sorry, Emily. Helen's my very good friend, you know, and I have to interrupt because it's not funny. It's a medical condition. It's not right to laugh at her. She's actually very sensitive about it. And just don't make jokes like that. Don't say things like, oh, you've got corona of the eye. She doesn't like that. Don't like look at her and go, hey, Helen, you're right. Da, 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 da. Eye corona. Just stop doing stuff like that. She hates it. Really upsetting, isn't it?
Absolutely. It cuts deep, Ellie. Yeah, it really cuts deep. Yeah, yeah. Especially on the 20th time you've sung it to me.
It's in my face. You were right what you said on the tube. They are dreadful cunts. Let's say it to their face.
If it's an eye or a cold sore, anything at all that happens on your face,
a pimple on the side of your nose, anything like that, it just ruins your day, ruins everything. I did have a date. I had like a pre-date with a bloke off Tinder. And I just wore my big Jackie O glasses.
You know, that used to be just called a date.
What's a pre-date?
It's where you don't fuck them, isn't it?
Yes. So this was a non-fucking date, because usually you just...
Okay, no, 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 no. Wait. If you're going on a predate, do both parties know that it's a predate?
Yeah. We said, shall we just meet in a park and have a drink and see how things
see
go?
See if the bike sheds are open.
It was opposite my house, but he didn't know that. It was in a park.
So you go first.
Oh, so you planned so that if it went well,
we could just nip and bounce. Yeah. I'd change the sheets and all, you know, done it nice.
Wow. Why would you do that? Why would you not change your sheets the next day?
Well, because...
I might have had the guy before in them.
Whole differently.
Listen, do not go round her house with a UV light.
So you went on your pre-date with your gammy eye.
Yes, but I had my big Jackie O sunglasses on. So I thought at least if I met him during the day, I could legitimately have my big glasses on. And we were just drinking coffee. And he's like, oh no, take them off. And then he was like...
Put them on.
I said, no, I do want to have sex with you, but maybe after
your eye gets better.
Yeah, because I think he was just a bit, he was a singer, I think he was a bit frightened.
Does he sing through his eye? What are you talking about?
That's maybe what he said, Ellie.
I'm a singer, so I just can't have sex.
I can't risk it.
No,
I just can't risk
it. I'm not Lenny Kravitz. I do need to wear,
I don't want to speak out of turn, but I am your best friend, and I don't think he's the one.
No, I know. No, but he did say he had an enormous penis. So I was like, oh, is it worth letting that go for
they
that?
They all say
do
that.
Do they?
Listen, that's all they know what? Basically, you're a rookie. We should say that Helen, although she's talking a good game, is new to fucking. She's new to fucking.
Like good fucking, not like other fucking.
Do you want to briefly...
It's like Goodfellas, but good fucking.
Briefly tell us what has occurred.
Yeah. Hello, listener. Yes, about approximately 6.5 months ago, nearly 7 months now, I became separated and it was a surprise. Let's just leave it at that. 2 weeks before lockdown, I was with the... father of my children for nearly 22 years. So the last time I had a date was never, because we started going out when I was 19 and it was at university.
And there were no dates.
There were no dates.
Let alone pre-dates.
Let alone, you know, yes, exactly right. So I have now become, a rookie in the world of new sex. I'm looking at you, Annabelle. I was like, you know.
You're like those people who take a drug for the first time at 36.
Yes, exactly.
And you think, oh God, this is going to be chaos.
Yeah, exactly right. And of course, yeah, so the last time I...
So did you spend... much time sort of licking your wounds, or did you just
I tried
honestly
all the yoga in the world in this mess.
Honestly,
if we could all do that, none of us would leave the goddamn house, Annabelle.
That's right, I need recruits for that sort of behaviour.
Straight back on the horse, weren't you?
I was so keen. I was absolutely keen. And I think given my circumstance, like I became single 2 weeks before lockdown, and then I had 3 months where I couldn't leave the house. So I was sort of slight...
Because you were trying to lick yourself.
Oh, yeah.
She's got a terrible prick in her neck. She couldn't stand up.
I was using those Pilates straps and all. But I went onto Tinder for, you know, the first time I signed up and put some photos out and did a little profile. And, you know, when you haven't, you know, you've had children and you are middle-aged and all that sort of stuff, like, oh, no one's going to want me. No one's going to find me attractive. And I sort of hooked up to Tinder and then sort of left it. And then
an IV.
Yeah. Just drip feed me the cock. That's right. Yeah, 2 days later, I sort of checked in and I had 2,000 men who had swiped right. And so I was like, oh, I mean, look, they weren't all princes. They weren't all, you know, there were a lot of frogs. But just the fact that I was suddenly a desired thing completely changed my mindset. And it shouldn't be, obviously, but it was a lovely thing. It was a lovely thing.
You are going to have to give me a lesson in profile.
Oh yes, let's do that. Yes, of course.
Because honestly, I've had when I've stuck a toe in the waters, just waiting for Ellie to say something rude.
Come on, put anything in the waters.
She said she paused.
I know. Oh, I guess.
I've had like half a like, not 2,000. By the way, listen,
I mean,
you're
the
about
nudes
to hear
were
some
very
sound
tasteful.
It's because we're opening a bottle of champagne because fuck it, we're together.
It is. It's we're here and it's nearly your birthday.
Oh God.
Oh, I know. Sorry.
What's your profile, Annabelle? Can you snapshot it for us?
Well, now I haven't done it in years. I tried it and found it so exhausting and demoralising. Mm. You know, because I tell you what,
when maybe don't write that on it. Exhausting and demoralising.
There you go.
I'm done.
When you're single and old,
yeah,
or not 25. I don't know. I find that if you go on a date, you know, if it's bad, you have to kind of recover from it. You have to really look after yourself afterwards. It's like everything, all the past failures, concertina back up on you, and it becomes a very bruising thing.
Yes,
but you seem to be sailing through this.
I know. I've had a good time. I've sort of narrowed down. I'm no longer dating men who are in finance. I had one date with a man.
You brought up, just to be clear, you brought up one career. Veterinarians,
absolutely okay. Yes.
Cheesemongers, they're still fine. In. Fishmongers, yes, still in. Estate agents,
no.
Solicitors,
sorry, no estate agents.
Why not finance? What happened with the finance guy?
Oh, he was just a bit dull, and I thought, no, I just ruled that out.
That doesn't mean all finance people are dull.
No, that's true. That's
We've
true.
Met some fucking dull comedians. I'll tell
oh
you that
God,
much.
Yeah, that's exactly yeah. true.
Yeah, so have I. What is it with that?
It's because we're all bullied at school. We hate ourselves. I could go on, but that's it in a nutshell.
So needy.
Yeah. I feel like comedians equals sexual dysfunction. Carry on.
Yeah. Then. Anyway, so I enjoy doing a bit of flirty chat, but my age range is 28 to 50.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but it's funny. There's a lot of boys who are 28 to 31, and then there's a bit of a dirge in that sort of middly section, and then there's a lot of
45
yeah, plus. So that's really interesting. Kind of, you know,
It is also the dirge just happens around when all women who want to have babies are desperate to try and get married and find someone. It's like it's just a sort of tumbleweed.
Yeah, and I find the younger ones, like there was one chap I was flirting with the other day who's 29, and you know, I think it was quite appealing. And I said to him, look, I own my own house. I'm, you know, I've got a career. I've done marriage. I've done kids.
I've got a fucking Nectar card, bitch.
That's right.
Tesco club card.
That's right. I'm quite high up in the ranks in Ocado. You know, things like that. And I think, you know, that appeals to him and that appeals to me because I'm like, great. So, yeah, it's just a really interesting field. And like this subsection of London that I had no idea about. So, yeah.
What, the single London?
Yeah, the single London.
Single London is very different from married London, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure it is in every town. So, yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. But, yeah, I'm trying to be... I am safe and, you know, trying to... you know, I had a lot of hurts. I'm trying to protect myself. But at the same time...
Do you think the lockdown, those 2.5-3 months, gave you time to sort of... hunker down and gain some perspective and recover and be with your kids. Mm. And so you went, do you think you fast tracked?
Yeah, I think I did separation boot camp because I couldn't leave my house. I couldn't go out and have drinks with the girls. No one hugged me apart from my children for 3 months. And when you're in the depths of trauma and sad, all you want is an embrace. Like it was very hard because I would see my neighbours across the road and they'd run in. And like Ellie would do, drop a lasagna on the front doorstep and say, I'm really sorry. And then we would sort of do this hug motion at each other. Yeah. And like all I wanted was an embrace. And I think that is, yeah, so...
getting quite a lot of those these days.
Yeah, all of the embraces.
Internally,
yeah.
The internal embrace.
Again, I think that's a film. I think I've seen that.
Imagine if you said that to a man on a first date. He would run screaming. It's like offering a blowjob with braces.
No, God, exactly right. Too much teeth. Yeah, so I think, also during that time, Ellie and I were still producing comedy and like... and we talked about it on the podcast, like for the first week after I found out about things and was separated, Ellie was in Japan. And so I didn't tell
her. I saw it coming. I was just like, I got to get out. I'm so done. I don't want to fucking hug this bitch for a week. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to get out. No, I was on holiday.
Yeah. So Ellie had this like holiday of a lifetime and she'd planned it for over a year with her parents. And then, yeah, it was like a day after she left for Japan, I found out the news. And and I was like... she doesn't need to know this. This is going to ruin her holiday. Aww. And I didn't. So, you know, it turns out I do have more than one friend. So I talked to them and to my family and then just waited for her to come home.
So what did you think when you came home and discovered the carnage?
I honestly thought I'd died in a fucking plane crash. Like, I was like, you know, like...
Alternate
reality. Like, it's like sliding doors.
Yeah.
So I came home and you messaged me, I think you messaged me earlier in the week saying, what time are you home or something?
Yeah.
and you'd message a group we were in saying, oh, does anyone know a good therapist? And I'd message you going, oh, what's going on? And you'd gone, oh, nothing, I just need to talk about. And I was like, you know, I was basically, you know, wheeling my parents around temples and telling, trying to get them not to ask them to cook the fish a bit more. So I was just like, you know, fine. That's very mean to my parents. They like a sushi. Anyway, so I came back, and then Tuesday morning you told me on the phone, and I just said, right, I'm come round in the car.
Mm.
And then so that happened, and I was just, we cried. Yeah. And then I was ill with it, and then the pandemic, and then when the lockdown happened, and I just thought, did I die in the plane? Like, yeah. Because this is all,
yeah, yeah. It's, it was, like, you came back to a different London.
It's a warp. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not as much of a shock to me as it was to you, but I did not see it coming in no way.
Mm.
You know, I never liked the man, but I didn't think he had it in him. So yeah. It was, you know, it was a massive shock. And then I felt, and obviously I wasn't, but I felt like I was going through it with you, and I had such rage that I still have. Mm. As you've yeah. seen, I'm more angry than you generally.
So yeah, no, that's good.
Even today I had one, we were walking here, and I was like, oh, it boils my piss that fucking this. And you were like, yeah, that's annoying. And I was like, yes. And I think I'm angrier than you.
Yeah, no, my other best friend says that it's such a relief because I'm angry for her about all this stuff.
Yeah, just like you would have made the phone call for me, you sometimes are very often angry on my behalf, which is fabulous, actually. It's great. But I remember how, like, I mean, your Insta lives were such a lifeline to a lot of people during lockdown because they were so funny and brilliant and X-rated and filthy and made us all feel so much better. But I also remember, Ellie, how pained you were not to be able to give Helen the hug and the sort, and I think that these are the things, aren't they? They've been,
I think,
so
it's
hard.
Sometimes worse for the hugger than the huggy.
Mm.
You mean? As in Emily, you are the hugger.
Yes.
And you found it very hard not to be delivering the hugs.
Yes, I did.
Mm.
Because that is an instant joy, because you feel like you are doing something very magic. A hug is a magical thing.
Yeah.
And you know how important it is to other people. And I think, yeah, I think that was, but I think all those Insta lives and the comedy, and we're making like silly, you know, songs and all that sort of stuff, and that kept me going, and people kept going, I come to Scummy Mummies every day to feel, you know, a relief, and thank God you're doing things. And so it gave me such focus and purpose, even though I was sort of dilally and a bit mental. I think that was really good. So we spent 3 months not mentioning it, and then the bubble happened, didn't it, Ellie, where we could see each other, and that was sort of mid-June. So went into lockdown late March, and then late June we could see each other, and then we did a podcast talking about it, and I could finally kind of come out, because I just thought, I've spent 7 years, like the Scummy Mummies have been going for over 7 years, and we don't share everything, but we share.
Because we have to think about your kids and what people are going to hear and how relationships are going to work in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And it had to be respectful, and it had to have some dignity. But also, I talked about what an impact it had had on me. So it wasn't about him. It was about what it feels like to be separated. So that was kind of liberating in a way.
What did your audience think?
It has had the biggest reaction of any podcast that we've ever done.
That was mostly me going, I'm crying, I'm laughing, I'm crying, I'm laughing.
Emily, I've got a special folder now for all your emails.
Also, it's not our competition, but I also had a premature baby.
I was about to say, the other podcast that had that effect was you talking about Joe, who was very, very early.
Mm.
And then recently we were talking about Joe again. And you turned into a sort of almost like a war reporter, because Joe, what, had a temperature or a cough?
He had a cough.
I think he did about 5 coughs.
Yeah, he did.
Joe, who's 5, did a cough.
Yeah.
Well, it went like this. I think it was the weekend he got a bit of a snotty nose, which is not a symptom.
It's a cold.
So we were a little bit on tenterhooks, but then we put him to bed Sunday night. He seemed absolutely fine. He hadn't been snotty all day. We were like, fine. And he'd only been back at school 1 week.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, I woke up, you know, when you wake up Monday morning and I didn't open my eyes yet, and I was just like, oh, Monday. And then I just heard, and I was like, no.
You were like, fuck off.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck off.
So I just lay there very still, very quiet, and just, I imagined it. I just heard it again. I was like, no, Pete, shut up. We're fucked. So we got up, and sure enough, and he was coughing, and we were like, fuck, we've got to call the school. So we call the school, 9 o'clock, he's not coming in, he's got a little cough.
Because also, of course, it's the first time in our living memory with one person's ill, one child is ill, We're all fucked.
It's the plague. It's like put the crosses on the door. Yeah.
So you called the school.
Called school. Put the phone down. 9:01 a.m. Did that child cough again? No. Has not coughed since. 3 weeks ago, has not fucking coughed.
No.
Not once.
But
not
then
once.
You went on your expedition that you filmed live. Will you talk us through that? Because it was, as far as Emily and I were concerned, it was a kind of feat of journalism. It was
basically like
in your face,
watching
Louis Theroux. Yes.
It was like, I don't know if anybody remembers watching O.J. Simpson running on the freeway live.
Yes.
So basically, it was Ellie and Joe's quest for a test. Was there a test to be had?
No. So we went to all these, we went to three different test centres, mm-hmm. and we met all these lovely men on the gate, and they were all the same. They're all like men in high visibility jackets whose job was supposed to be to stand there and go, right, this is where you park. But their job had become standing there and explain to reams of people, oh yeah, this used to be a walk-in centre, but now it's not because the lab's overloaded and I'm really sorry I can't let you in and have you got a code and all this thing. And these men were like, they were all lovely, which I find astonishing as well. They were all really polite and patient, but they were like, no, you can't have a fucking test.
You're not coming in.
No, your name's not Dan. You're going to die of a global pandemic.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. I'm not laughing.
That was not Helen laughing.
No,
that
no.
was her eye exploding.
Yeah, that's just what happens. Yeah, just a sort of weeps laughter.
And you and I had our first gig that week after 6 months off, so it was imperative we got this fucking test.
Yeah, so you got the cough on the Monday, and it was Thursday night that we were going to do our first live show, which was all very socially distant. It was in this glorious teepee in Somerset, all spread out, and we were very excited. Mm. And like, it had sold out and there were 200 people coming, so we're like, yeah, we want to do this.
Yeah.
And but you tried all the right ways. You were trying,
I seem to remember that they told you there was a test available in a test centre in Southampton.
That's right, the office is Southampton.
You live in Catford.
And at this point, and we live in South East London, Catford, at this point I was like, right, well, fuck it, we'll drive to City Pete. I've driven to Southampton for a gig before, let's do this.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
2.5 hours each way, but
we've got a car.
Do we have? And we're very lucky that Pete's not working at the moment, which financially is slightly unlucky. But the man can drive us to Southampton. So we were like, fuck it, we'll go to Southampton. Maybe they've got a very nice Greggs. I don't know. Something will turn up. And then, so I clicked on the thing, said, yes, we'll go to Southampton. And then it said, oh, there's no time slots available. And then it offered us one in Warminster, which was like another 100 miles. Somewhere else it was 100 miles.
Mm.
So we were fucked. And we tried the phone and we tried the website and nothing worked. And in the end, someone on Instagram said, there's a clinic in South East London where this lady, Dr. Mione, is doing private tests and it's £200.
Yeah.
And we just had to do it. And I've never used, I'm against private medicine in principle. I've never used it in my entire life. But I had to, because the choice was you and I would lose the gig and lose the income.
And its reputation and its all of
it was organised by other people.
And every part of your being told you that you didn't have it, right?
Yes, exactly.
You
had to check. Professionalism, everything.
As you say, the child had not coughed. So
thanks, Joe.
I had to do the maths and just go, well, we've got to pay this £200. But how lucky are we that we are in a position I've got a husband who can drive to Southampton and a car that I could drive to Southampton and £200 knocking about that I can spaff on a fucking cotton bud.
Yeah.
You know, it was an edifying experience and I ranted about it on the internet and people liked it.
But it was so beautifully done in that you just did it step by step. You showed the website, you said, look, this is me trying to refresh it. But the thing is that it wasn't your experience, only your experience, that waves and waves of people said, yeah, I'm in Aberdeen and I've been sent to Kent. I'm in Manchester.
Exeter to Inverness.
And also, it was
Exeter to fucking Inverness.
I mean, that's such an exposure.
Yeah.
So Ellie was locked in the house for a couple of days. And you have said this, like, when you're in a crisis and when things are really tricky, you go into overdrive.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was on form. I was like, I love her when she's angry, listener, because she's her best person. She's her best self because she was angry and she was motivated. And you were producing sketches. You pretended to be a news reporter.
Fucking great breaking news.
And people were hanging on every word. And we were getting messages like, I haven't been able to sleep. I've just been thinking about Joe's diagnosis and things like that.
But you know what? Female anger is an amazingly motivating thing. And we're all grown up to think that it was, you know, brought up things that it was unattractive and we shouldn't do it. But actually, I completely agree. When you're angry, you can be effective and funny and dynamic, and you know, we should all be a bit angrier, I think.
Yeah, I think also, and we were saying this earlier, like that it gave us all permission to be angry. Mm. And I think that we've all been trying to be so good and noble and carry through and not take
like we
too
can
much.
Shift like, the tectonic plates of the universe with our own virtue just by being brilliant. Oh, yeah. My husband's fucking someone else, I'll be brilliant. Oh, my kid's in trouble, oh, I'll just be brilliant.
Yeah. I'll smooth it over. I will make things nice.
But also just we're
maybe
towing
we'll be
the
more
line.
Effective if we're being arseholes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. But also so you know Brené Brown, the American researcher and writer.
God,
she did this podcast, which I listened to actually quite near the start of lockdown, about which I'm obsessed with now, about overachievers and underachievers, and how there's kind of two kinds of people. And it's not about judgment, it's not about one's better or worse. Because she's an overachiever and she talks about like her mum was in hospital and so she goes into overdrive and she's like, right, so I'm going to make a list and I'm going to assign tasks to all my brothers and sisters and this is how it's going to work and I can do that task, and she takes all this stuff. And that's overachieving, where you sort of cope with crisis by distracting yourself by taking on the work. And then there are underachievers who don't do that and who kind of just want to pull the duvet up and can't move, and they distract themselves with that. And neither way is right or wrong, because the overachiever always ends up burning themselves out and they put all this energy, they do all this stuff, and suddenly they just sort of fall apart. And because they put everything on themselves, everything fucking falls apart. So then it's a disaster. Mm. So I've been wary of that and being like, all right, and seeing it as right, this is a period of mania and making content and all this stuff, but I don't put pressure on myself to then keep doing that indefinitely, and I don't promise anything anyone, because as you know, inherently I'm fucking lazy.
Yeah.
And I cannot keep it up sustainably.
No, it has its time.
Yeah, which is why you do most of the content on Instagram.
Oh,
and I just quietly edit the podcast in my bedroom.
Oh my god, well, that's
if you're really having to be creative and, you know, God forbid, funny, you know, it slightly comes in fits and starts.
But you must know, as a double act, as friends, as, you know, yin-yang to each other, is that you have these moments where the other person rises or the other person falls and you just make it up. You're always you were always the same whole. And at some time...
I'm sorry.
She's making a serious point, guys. She's saying every hole has goals. That's what she's saying.
Just don't do it in your eye. But yeah.
Is that effectively what you put out there is going to have this?
It's like a set of scales, right? Yeah. And sometimes the scales are even, and like sometimes it's 90% Ellie, sometimes it's 90% Helen. But it's always 100%.
Yeah, I often sit there and think, I'm just going to sack myself today.
I'm just shit today. I can't do it.
But okay, so let's talk about female partnerships and female friendships.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been
together? Not doing scissors with you, if that's what you're building up to. That's what this is about. That's why you've got to sit tonight.
Will.
Yes.
Oh, God, it's all been a ruse.
Feels seduced.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been together for?
We met in 2013, so 7.5 years ago, and we met at a comedy club. Clubs are probably...
Club's a strong word. It was a shipping container.
It was a shipping container, Ellie, yes.
With crates in it, which the audience sat on. There was no heating, so they had blankets.
Yeah, and...
And there were some fairy lights. Those were lights.
That's right, and there were some Spanish tourists.
Two Spanish tourists.
Who were very confused. They were confused why they were there.
So you've been together for 7 years, and Emily and I have been together for, 17... But intensely.
But did you meet at school? You were at the same school, is
we
that
were
right?
At the same school, but we weren't friends.
That's
and then
I was in the year below, and Annabelle just sort of like glided around, and I thought she was marvellous. And
she glid around.
Oh, I gloated, there's a mum at school. There's a mum at school who said, "Oh my god," she listened to your podcast, and then she realised who you were, and she was like, "Oh, I went to school with Annabelle. She was amazing." I'm like, "Isn't she amazing?" I'm like, "She's my friend." So I like own you now in the school ground.
I was an asshole,
but a brilliant asshole, Annabelle. Yeah, by the sounds of things, an impressive asshole.
Yeah. That's my shtick.
Annabelle Rifkin, impressive asshole.
Oh my god, we need to get this.
I'm fine with that. Let's get the t-shirts.
Own it. Yes.
So we became great friends in 2003, and then started working together from 2015-16. But there's this idea with women that partnerships, friendships, working relationships have to be very combustible. That has not been our experience.
Yeah.
And I don't believe it's been yours, has it?
No, absolutely not. And also, as you guys are now when you bring money into it, like, as well, like, I love Ellie dearly and I can't live without her. But also we have now, the way our business has gone, like, we need each other for, yeah, you know, like, in all sorts of ways. And that I think that does have a slight impact on what you do and your work and where you've reached in your career as well, is that, like, you work extra hard. There's, you know, the stakes get higher.
Because also you're making each other money.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know about you, but there's a mutual understanding that the money is extremely important but less important than the relationship.
Oh, for sure, yeah, for sure. And that always comes down to it.
It's just, yeah, a way to facilitate being together more.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, to have lovely lunches. Lovely lunches.
Yes, exactly.
But people are so keen to say, oh, well, they're jealous of each other. Oh, well, they're competitive. Or what?
No, because
they're
we're not men.
We're not fucking men.
Sorry. Ellie, you talk.
I've always found that nutty, though. I've never had that in my other female friendships, even before I met you. Like, yeah, you lift each other up and you're grateful if the other person has a success, you're brilliant. Like, and I always say it's the good of the whole.
Absolutely.
I see, it's coming around. More whole. For the good of my whole.
Talking holes with Ellie and Helen. Yes.
If you're getting it in all the holes, that's yes, the same as me.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Does
exactly
the eye count as a whole? It does now.
Yeah, I think so. I think I've brought that in. I've introduced that into the mix.
With a working friendship, that it becomes incredibly important. Like, really a very profound thing in your life.
Yeah. It's such
spoiler
a
alert, my birthday card to you is basically just like a mass gush about how I can't live without you.
spoiler alert, my birthday card to you, because both our birthdays are in October, is it's got Marie Kondo, because I know you hate it. That's a different dynamic, isn't it? That's a different...
Well, does this bring me joy?
Yeah, no, I got rid of that thing that didn't spark me joy, so that's good, that's 2020 done.
But you take the rough with the smooth.
Yeah, you do. Exactly.
So we're going to sign off.
Okay.
And we're going to say... We love you, Ellie and Helen. We love you so much.
We do. Really? Oh. Thanks for having us, guys. It's been nice. We've got to go.
She always says nice, which she means
you're not going anywhere.
We're in here for the long haul.
Thank you for having us. We actually, and you know that sentiment is quite difficult for me, Helen,
dreadful,
but we do admire and love you very much.
That was hard. It's just made me feel better about everything, including my birthday, Ellie.
Can I just, towards the end of this podcast, say, we sat around this table in, was it January?
Yeah, I think it was.
We had quite a night. You made a lovely chicken pie, Annabelle. It was a lovely chicken pie. And we stayed far too late. We overstayed our welcome. And on the way home, I think it was 2 a.m. And we live very far away.
So
we live
in far. You're so good.
So far. So they're far. In West London. We're in South East London. And about 10 minutes into the car journey, I was like... Oh no, Ellie. Oh no, I'm going to do a very bad thing. And I threw up into my rucksack for 40 minutes.
Can I add to this? The a few months, how many months earlier, you'd come to our book launch.
Yes.
And
spewed. Yeah.
Bombed.
This is a terrible thing. So
tonight,
I'm trying not
it's
to.
It's going to be messy.
Yeah, okay, that's it.
Do my you fall. Think you could actually spew from your eye?
That's how she got this way.
I know, exactly. I thought it was because the man had a penis that went out of my eye, but it's not. It's not that at all. Anyway, what a lovely way to end things.
It was lovely. Yeah. And then I, for some reason, I ended up with your bag or something. Or
a bag full of sick?
No, yeah. we put that in the bin, didn't we? Or did you hold it?
I think I took the key items out of your bag.
Yes.
And I think we binned the bag, but then I took them home. And then Pete was like, oh my God, there's sick in your headphones. And I was like, Helen. He was like, oh yeah.
I'm a spewer, ladies.
Everyone's got a thing.
That's your
everyone's
thing.
Got a talent.
That's fine with us.
I mean, some people it's cake decorating,
some
horse
people
riding,
like knitting,
vomiting.
Great.
So let's see what happens later.
Okay.
Thanks everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Annabelle Rivkin and Emily McMeekin of The Mid-Alt. Our book, I'm Absolutely Fine, is out now. If you like what you hear, please rate, review and subscribe.
And we'll just leave you with this thought. Enough with the living and learning.